Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today. Preaching the Parables is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Welcome, Dr. David Scare, Chair of Biblical and Systematic Theology at Concordia Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's lovely to have you with us today, Dr. Scare.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Pastor Ehlers.
Today we want to talk a little bit about preparing a sermon, especially perhaps on the parables. Our theme is always Jesus as the center and the content of the scriptures. And a lot of people maybe don't see Jesus as the center of the parables, or even the content of the parables.
You know, there are a lot of famous preachers in the world, but if we're interested in all these great preachers, why doesn't somebody pay attention to the preaching of Jesus? And at least from my own experience as a seminarian, I thought the worst thing to do in my seminary career was to prepare sermons. Now, let's consider what a minister has to do every day. I mean, every week. There are 52 Sundays in the year. And then you add special services for Lent and Advent, and you've got about 12 more. This does not include funerals, special confirmation services, anniversaries, and weddings. Now, is it really possible for any human being to be so creative and imaginative that he can get up and keep the people's interest for 20 to 25 minutes on a Sunday? So as a seminary student, and I think I'm perfectly typical of everyone, so I don't think that what I'm saying is unknown or unusual. I don't know how many pastors will be listening to this. But as a student, and we were assigned a section from the Bible to preach on, we were eternally grateful if we got something to preach from St. Paul, because we could then go and teach doctrines. And that's pretty clear cut. You know, Jesus died for sins, and we believe that the sacrament is Christ's body and blood. In fact, when I was 21, I was a vicar, and it was a wonderful occasion because I had two congregations. And in those days, I was pretty much fixated on the epistles of St. Paul. One of the readings from Romans was, "We are buried by baptism into Christ, that even as he was raised from the dead, we should walk in the newness of life." I'm 21, had 2 years of seminary, pretty confident about what I believed. Didn't know exactly what I was doing. Once or twice I forgot the Lord's Prayer, and some people came up and reminded me of my great fault. That's the way it goes. Well, after I had preached the sermon on baptism, two Presbyterian ministers who were 55, they were about, now I'm 20 years older than they are then, more than 20 years older. To me, they were overbearing people. They had a kind of a grayish look. They came and they let me know that baptism was no good, because they knew Lutherans who had been baptized and they turned out to be sinners. These gentlemen were 2.5 times older than I was. And I simply couldn't handle it. And if I had been older, I would have realized two things, I should say. I would have responded in kind. I should have said, I know a lot of people who made decisions for Christ and they have turned out to be great sinners. Therefore, decisions for Christ are no good. That's what I should have said. Now, is that the Christian thing to do? Doesn't sound like it, but it is. Because they were advancing a false position. The second thing which I learned from that episode all summer long is that when you're preaching to an unknown audience, a British scholar by the name of C.H. Dodd, he made this point that there were four things that the apostles preached. And he did this from the book of Acts. Christ died for sins, he rose from the dead, he'll return again, and he is Lord of Christ. Jesus is Lord of Christ. And in speaking to an unknown audience now, and they were under obligation by the government to give advertisement to our service, and they weren't too happy to promote a Lutheran service. They didn't even put down we were Lutheran. I didn't know who was going to show up, but I realize now that what should be preached, That is the very basis of salvation, those four items. Jesus died for sins. He rose from the dead. He is Lord or Christ. And you can read, by the way, the book of Acts. and he will return in judgment. If you can work on this particular level, if people then are willing to understand that, at least in some way, then the idea that baptism works salvation doesn't sound as strange to them or as foreign. In fact, you shouldn't go out and preach the sacraments like that until there is some kind of commitment to Jesus, because what is the value of going into what to those people appear to be weird or extraneous things? And when I got to the seminary and I was 30 years of age, I'd been a pastor for 5 years, I struggled with this particular problem. It seemed to me that in preaching, the pastor or the student, the pastor has to go through too many steps. He's living in the year 2000, I think that's where we are, right? So then he has a certain church position which he has to defend. And if you're a Lutheran, you have to take into consideration the great Lutheran theologians of the 16th and 17th century. Then you got to think of the Lutheran confessions. Then you got to think of the early church fathers. And then you get into the New Testament. Then you get there with Paul, the great theologian. And Lutherans like John very much. Everybody likes John. And then what crossed my mind was the poor student or the poor pastor. There is so many layers, time frames that he has to go through to get to the gospel. I mean the gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. When he gets there, he has this huge amount of baggage or burden on him that he's going through his mind of how he's going to deal with the material. And so I teach dogmatics. So I decided at that time, and it was a gradual process, that I would simply teach Christian doctrine on the basis of the teachings of Jesus. Not Bible passage by Bible passage. No way. No way like that. But actually look at what is recorded in the gospel as his sermons. Now we have 4 gospels. When you approach a gospel, you're seeing our gospels were not written. They were preached. They were oral documents. And it's very hard to understand that some of the great people of the ancient world were illiterate. In a sense, they did not sit down at a table and write. They gave dictation. That's how our gospels were written. Basically, they were given as sermons. And their minds were trained to think that way. Let's take the example of Matthew, who knew Jesus. He heard Jesus preached, and then he took what Jesus preached, and he put it in. Jesus preached oral sermons. Matthew heard them, and so did others. And then they made it that part of their preaching, and as the apostles preached, they took down what they wrote. I don't know if you've been in this kind of situation when there's a person there, and he's speaking, and he's so marvelous that you say, I have to take this down. You can imagine if Peter was preaching or any of the, they actually knew Jesus. You know, many people discover that somebody knew their grandfather. They didn't ever knew their grandfather, but they run into a person who knew their grandfather. What do? You want to squeeze that guy's mind out for every bit of information. The evangelists, the apostles, were walking containers of the gospel, and from these human beings came the gospels. And each evangelist wrote in an entirely different way. Matthew took the teachings of Jesus, and he divided them up into 5 different topics. The first one was the Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5, 6, and 7. This describes how the Christian is to live in Christian community or church with other Christians. It's very much like going to basic military training. You're to forgive everybody. You're not to go and accuse anybody of anything. It indicates to you that thoughts are just as bad. It tells you that before you go to church and before you go to the sacrament, and if you have something is not right in the church, for heaven's sakes, clean it up. Reconcile with the person you disagree with. Why? Because God's reconciled to you. That's good enough. The God who redeemed you is reconciled to you. Hey, guy, that's what you got to do. The next one has to do with authority in the church. You know, democracy really doesn't all work out. Some guy has to call it. Well, the authority happens to be the apostles. And then what is intriguing are the evangelists put the parables into the third discourse. And we'll get back to that in just a second. But the fourth discourse had to do basically with how do you handle divorce? How many times should I forgive somebody? And then the final and fifth discourse is a reference to the crucifixion as the day of judgment. So it gives you an idea of how that was arranged by topics. But let's get to the parables. The parables are figurative speech. I'm not so sure that there is one definition under which we can put the parables. And here is where a pastor, a minister who has to preach every Sunday, runs into a real problem. And it should not really be a problem for this reason. The most interesting people, the people who we find interesting, are the people who have colorful language, speak in metaphors and examples. Their stories are so good, they intrigue us. I always like to mention Irish persons, and that when an Irish person tells a story, you never know what the conclusion is, and you never know whether he's pulling your leg until you get to the very end. Now, I love those kind of people because they make life interesting. Well, the parables are, they're enjoyable, and yet they are the biggest obstacles to pastors who are preaching. And I've struggled with these parables, and I'm always happy to learn something I didn't know before. And you think you have all the answers. We were taught that the parables were examples for everyday life. You know, sower went out to sow a seed. You know, that's the largest occupation in the world, people being farmers and so forth. But very strange, it only happened a little while ago, these are not common examples from everyday life. Because in the first parable, it says a man went out to sow seed. Some fell on the road, was trampled. Some went under the weeds. And he wasn't very careful what he was doing. I have a son, he was a pastor in southern Indiana. And there was a member of a congregation, had developed seed corn. I'm not a farm person. And seed corn is very expensive. And you may not use the seeds that are from the previous year and then to plant in the next year's harvest. And well, you do the government, they come over with planes, and they find you that you're using, because that is under patent, it's copyrighted. Now, if you were paying, I'm not a farmer, but if you were paying those big bucks for the seed, you wouldn't be so lackadaisical about where you were going to throw it. That would be a fortune. And then it dawned on me that this shows the extravagant love of God in preaching. He preaches even where he knows it will be rejected. That the parables are not true to life. It's sort of like a story that an Irish person tells you. You're listening to the story and you're saying, oh, this is true. Maybe it's not true. And then when he gets to the end of the parable, you realize that you've been taken down the primrose path. And that's the kind of preacher Jesus was. And I think what is also marvelous about the preaching of Jesus, he let the people indict themselves. Isn't Jesus an amazing person? He goes to the well in Samaria, and he engages in a conversation. He doesn't say, I'm Jesus of Nazareth, the local rabbi. He doesn't say, I'm the Messiah. He doesn't say he's the Son of God. He says, have a drink of water to the lady. And it's a setup. It's a beautiful setup. So she responds, I'm really surprised you're talking to me. First of all, you're a male. I'm a female. And you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. And that's another reason why we shouldn't be even talking together. So Jesus says to her, why don't you get your husband? Oh, I don't have a husband. Oh, you know, you're right, lady. You haven't had one husband. You've had seven. And the fellow you're living with now, he's not your husband either. Do you see how Jesus lets the person come to his or her own conclusions? And that's the way faith works. Faith is not simply giving people answers. God, or to say Jesus, God wants us to struggle so that we come to the conclusion themselves. So our sermons always has to have an unknown element in it, so that people really don't know exactly where we're going. And I said this when we started out on this. To me, the most difficult thing at the seminary was preaching. And I also realized what a bad job I had done. I followed all the rules and all that kind of stuff, but I must have been as dull as nails. People don't get the Canaanite woman. Now, that's a very well-known gospel. Jesus is there, and the apostles, the disciples, realize they're going to be very important men. They're sort of like in their last year at West Point. They're in graduate school. They're going to become attorneys in a few months. They have to have self-confidence and big heads. I want my lawyer to be that kind of person. I don't want him to be. So this woman comes, and she's saying, "Lord, have mercy on me. My daughter is sick," and so forth. Jesus keeps walking away. The disciples say, and it's so beautiful, "The woman is coming after us, and she's annoying us." It's so wonderful. I mean, Jesus is so wonderful because he uses the people to come to their own conclusions. So the thing ends with, she says, I'm not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You're a Gentile. She's even called a Canaanite woman, which would bring to mind the book of Joshua and Judges, where Israel was commanded to kill the Canaanites. Now, if Israel, Joshua and the Judges, had fulfilled what God did, what God told them to do, she would have no existence at all. But there she is. She's only around because some Jew didn't obey the will of God. It's a great story. So then Jesus says, it's not fit to take the food, the bread of the children, and give it to the dogs. Oh, that's awful what Jesus said, called her a dog. No, it was a setup. It's not fit to take the bread from the table and give it to the household pets. That's what he said. He was setting her up with the answer. He was actually giving her the answer. He wasn't calling her a dog. She then responds, but yet, and everybody has fancy dog food, but not in the ancient world. There was no fancy dog food. They ate whatever, if you were brought up on the farm, as you were brought up on the farm, the dogs ate the scraps. And she said, yeah, but the puppies, the little, don't they eat the crumbs? And she knew that Jesus was talking not about table manners. He was talking about him. He was talking about himself. And in all of the discourses of Jesus, there is something wonderfully mysterious in there. I'm not speaking about belief, and I'm not speaking about faith, and I'm not speaking about Christianity. There is something in the way that he spoke that simply draws you to him so that you know what's going on in his mind. And when you go into his mind, then you find the treasures that God has intended for us. She knew this, that this one crumb was Jesus himself. And there's sacramental overtones. You don't have to, if you're going to the sacrament, you don't have to have a loaf of bread. You just have to have a little bit of the wafer, because he permeates the total reality. We mentioned that the parables, that the third discourse in Matthew are the parables, but all of Jesus' language is parabolic. That means you take references from other situations. And I don't know if people follow what I say, the students, but I club it into their heads without any mercy. You must preach on the Gospels, because Christianity is about Jesus. And it's not what the apostles thought about Jesus, it's what Jesus said about himself. You didn't have to go around using the word I. When he said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of the heavens. Blessed are those who are persecuted on account of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of the heavens." They knew That was Jesus himself.
Another thing I've noticed about Jesus' teaching, and it's one thing we don't do today, or I don't think we do enough of, and I think you were pointing to this earlier, is when Jesus taught, he asked questions. We tell people the answer. Jesus, as you mentioned, he was always asking questions to have people connect the dots and bring it to themselves. The parables are always in context of questions.
Yeah, because you do not know. It's like an Irish person story. Mm-hmm. When the story begins, you don't know what the conclusion is.
You think you know what the conclusion is.
That's absolutely right.
I think I love my neighbor. And Jesus goes, really?
Well, you know, one parable, and it struck me about the beheading of John the Baptist. And it starts out that Herod, he had invited the leaders of his kingdom, which would be military persons, to a banquet. And they were all there. And then his stepdaughter, Herodias's daughter, who was married to his wife, probably a very slim young thing, comes out and does a very sensuous dance, and he's completely taken by it, says, I'll give you anything you want up to the half of the kingdom. And women were not present at the banquet. She was probably in the other room, the mother of this girl. She doesn't know what to do. She goes and asks, and she wants the head of John the Baptist because John is preaching. I didn't see until just a few weeks ago the correlation to the parables in the fifth discourse where a certain great king gave a feast and he invited many and they didn't come. And then they went out to the highways and the byways. I thought this was an ordinary story, okay? So the king gives this banquet and he invites the important people to come. They don't come. I never realized that episode would never happen in real life. Now, I'm not English the way you are, but I can tell you this, that if I got an invitation to Buckingham Palace, I'd be there outside the gate an hour earlier. You do not turn down the invitation. In fact, I was just looking at a brochure over there of a man who received a letter from the Prime Minister that he was being nominated for the Order of the British Empire. And the letter comes from, I have been asked by the Prime Minister to let you know that he will nominate you to the Queen. And please let me know by return mail that you will accept it. And I didn't say you can think about it, well, you will accept it. Because it would be a very embarrassing thing to accept the invitation from the Prime Minister and the Queen and not to go. You go. For years ago, I had invitations to the White House to meet Reagan. I don't know how I got it. But I was going to go. I was so nervous the first time going down to Washington, D.C. I went down the wrong way of a one-way street. I suppose today that would be a security risk and the rifles would come right on out. Now, the point is, when you get when Herod gave that invitation to the important men in his kingdom for dinner, dancing, and cigars, all the officers are going to be there. If you are in the military as a lieutenant, and the commanding officer gives a reception, or his wife gives a reception, whether your wife wants to go or not, she goes. That's the way it is. Now, that's the parable of Jesus. A certain king gave a feast, and the people... I didn't realize that the parable never really happens. Mm-hmm. Because you're listening to the story, you're all caught up that this would never happen. And then comes the killer, that the people who do not accept the invitation are the Jews themselves. Jesus was indicting them by way of a parable. And with the parable, you can go into that parable many times. You can go through the parable for the whole your life. You will see something there that wasn't there before. Well, take, for example, the parable of the sower. Some grow up and then they're thorns. And Jesus says, these are the people who will give themselves over to acquiring wealth. Well, you might remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says you cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve money.
The examination on preaching the parables will continue next week. Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.